I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about something no one wants, the flu and other contagious diseases. We'll talk about what goes into combating these bugs, and we'll discuss what the costs, financial and otherwise, are when the sickly season kicks in. My guests are Dr. Jerome Adams, Indiana State Department of Health Commissioner, and Dr. Joan Duvey, Chief Medical Officer with the Indiana State Department of Health. Please join the conversation. Call us at 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi, and Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about the challenges of dealing with flu season, and actually the season when we have a lot of contagious illness. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Dr. Jerome Adams, who is the commissioner with the Indiana State Department of Health, and Dr. Joan Duvey, who is also with the Indiana State Department of Health and is the chief medical officer. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you very much.
And I assume at least you guys are feeling well today and all of that.
Oh, yeah.
This is good. This is good. Well, tell me a little bit. Let's start. Is this a good year for the flu or bad year? And I'm not sure how do we define that. Good year as in there's more of it, or bad year meaning there's more of it?
Well, this year we are seeing a little bit more flu than we typically see on an annual basis. So it is within the past couple of years, this might be considered a bad year. But we have years like this periodically. The severity of flu season tends to, you know, sort of wax and wane. And so within the past couple of years, I would say this is probably the worst flu season we've seen.
When we say past couple of years, are we talking about the past two or three, or the past decade, or?
Yeah, I would say the past sort of 3 to 5 years.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And is the, what you're sort of suggesting there, that there's something almost cyclical about this? I mean, is it something you can chart and see, okay, you know, like the cicadas returning or whatever, or is it more random than that?
Yeah, I think it tends to be more random. It just really depends on, first and foremost, the match between the flu vaccine and circulating influenza viruses. And unfortunately, this year, we have a circulating virus that isn't included in the vaccine. And so even people who have gotten a flu shot are getting sick with flu.
How do we define, you know, well, let me take a step back on that. What is it that makes the flu so difficult to contain?
So do you mean in terms of vaccination?
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, these viruses, and we could include the common cold and all of that, why, you know, we can't find some sort of antidote or preventative thing other than hygiene. Could you walk me through first what the flu is and then why it is hard to control it in the degree that it is?
So flu or influenza virus has surface proteins on the outside that change very frequently. And so the flu that you had last year doesn't really prepare your immune system for the flu that's circulating this year. So unlike other diseases such as chickenpox or measles, if you get vaccinated once or you get that disease once, you're good.
You're inoculated, basically.
Yeah, but with flu, those surface proteins, and that's what we immunize against, and that's what one of the things our immune system recognizes, they continue to change. And so it's really important to get that flu vaccine every year.
And from a behavioral point of view, it's a difficult problem to address, mm-hmm. because everyone knows someone who got the flu.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has gotten the flu if you live to a certain age. And we tend, and you may have heard me say this in other venues recently, that we don't take it as seriously as perhaps we should. And it sets us up for years like this when we get a particularly difficult strain for people to say, it's the flu. I've had that. I've never gotten vaccinated. Mm-hmm. And to not do the things that we know can be done. You mentioned hand washing, simple hygiene. That's the amazing thing about the flu, is that the prescription for stopping the flu is very simple. It's get your vaccination. It's take proper precautions, wash your hands or use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer, cover your mouth when you cough or you sneeze. And if you get sick, stay home. Call your doctor and have a discussion about antivirals. It's really a 1-2-3 prescription for stopping the flu.
And is that, when we probably ought to walk through it, is the washing the hands and all of that, when you say cover your mouth when you cough or you sneeze, I presume we're talking about, one of the biggest changes I think I've seen in social behavior mm-hmm. in my lifetime is that we moved from covering your mouth with your hand when you mm-hmm. coughed, to I think what they call the Count Dracula cough now, or it's almost like you're pulling a cloak up and coughing into your elbow.
Yeah, my son actually pulls his shirt up and coughs into the inside of his shirt. But that's absolutely right, because if you cough into your hand and then you don't immediately wash your hands, you can contaminate surfaces, you shake somebody else's hand, and then you're transmitting flu virus.
We are talking about the flu season and really how we combat contagious illnesses here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, as I understand, I'm going to try to break this down because I'm the one person in this conversation so far who does not have a medical degree. So I have to bring this down to my level. It sounds like part of the reason the flu is so hard to combat, and this may be oversimplifying, is that it mutates pretty rapidly. That it's like every time you get the flu and your immune system is ready to deal with it, they're like, to use the cliche, the generals who are fighting the last war.
Right.
They haven't gotten the message. Are there, is there any way to anticipate scientifically how influenza or the flu is going to mutate or change, or is it almost like a living organism? It adapts to what it perceives to be threats.
Oh, that's a good question, and it's probably a little bit beyond my level of knowledge. But what I can tell you is that we do surveillance for flu. And so the CDC does surveillance, the World Health Organization does surveillance. And so occasionally we'll pick up a strain of flu that we haven't seen before, which isn't circulating, but it's very contained. So, for example, in Indiana a couple of years ago, we had an H3N2 virus that that a few people got from handling pigs.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a widely circulating virus. It was just in a few people. But that sort of it prompts you to look for more cases of that to see if it is indeed being spread person to person.
Now, was that what was popularized as the swine flu, or was that something else?
That was H1N1, I think, in 2009.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and that sort of gets to, I think, what was Dr. Adam's point here, too, is that we seem to fluctuate between two extremes
mm-hmm.
when we talk about the flu. You know, when we have the avian flu or the swine flu or whatever, it is if the plague has come back and we react to that in very extreme ways, or we tend to ignore it. Have there been any studies done, Dr. Adams, on what prompts this sort of wide discrepancy between the ways that our society reacts to the flu, which sounds like it is pretty much a constant in that it will uptick a little bit and downtick a little bit, but it's sort of like taxes and death. The flu is always going to be there.
Well, I'm also a psychiatry major in addition to a psychology major in addition to majoring in biochemistry. So I've done a lot of that, even though I didn't love those classes in particular. But it is. It's about human behavior, and it's about the immediacy of the fear, the severity of the consequences. And again, we all know people who've had the flu and they haven't died.
Mm-hmm.
To compare it to another disease, Ebola.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been interesting. Part of my job is to help interpret the data and to help put it in perspective for the citizens. And with Ebola, we had one person who developed symptoms in the United States who's died from Ebola. And in contrast, we've had 66 people so far reported die from the flu in Indiana. 66 of our...
In Indiana. Oh, wow.
Of our Hoosier family members who've died in Indiana. But yet we are terrified of Ebola. And some of the responses and reactions that people have had to it are just way out of sync to the facts. Whereas with the flu, we're in the process right now, and thank you for having us on this show, of trying to let people know this is a more severe season and that we need to be a little bit more concerned about flu this season than what we have been in the past.
What are the signs that, you know, like most people, you know, I'm anticipating every year I get the flu in some fashion or another, and I realize, okay, it's going to be probably one entire day I'm going to be knocked flat and really not fit for human contact with anyone. And, you know, there'll be some limited I'll be able to do a few things on either side of that. What are the signs that it's gone beyond, you know, you need to lie down, you need to drink a lot of fluids, you need to rest and let your body fight this, to the point where, like this, you could be one of those 66 people who dies?
Well, I'll let Joan take the specifics about symptoms. But one thing I want to emphasize is of our 66, 60 of them have been people who are over the age of 65. So there are certain high-risk groups who need to pay particular attention to taking proper precautions, those who are elderly, those who are under the age of 5, and those who have comorbidities. And in addition to those high-risk groups, if you are around one of those high-risk groups, you really want to take proper precautions so that you aren't bringing the flu home to your loved one. Joan, did you want
to... And again, to get us out of just a little bit out of the medical jargon, when you talk about comorbidities, what are you talking about there?
Joan, did you want to take that?
Sure. And I'm going to add pregnant women to the list because
Certainly.
That's a very important risk group. So comorbidities. So do you have a medical condition that predisposes you to a more severe influenza illness? For example, people who have respiratory problems. So people
with asthma
or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, smokers might have that. People who do smoke, people who have heart disease or diabetes or cancer or who are on immunocompromising therapy. So people with, for example, rheumatoid arthritis. So those are the folks. And then younger children and then older adults whose immune systems aren't perhaps functioning at the highest level.
And what are the symptoms that it's become more severe than, you know, as I say, just drinking lots of fluids and giving yourself, your body, lots of rest?
Well, I would recommend if you're in one of those risk categories and you develop any symptoms of flu, so you wake up, you have a fever, you're coughing, just not feeling well. And really, people with the flu don't feel well. They don't even really want to get out of bed, like you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Call your family doctor. And you'll want to talk about perhaps getting some antiviral therapy, especially this year. So don't wait. Don't wait for those symptoms to get worse, because we know that antiviral therapy actually works better the sooner you start taking it.
And when we talk about antiviral therapy, what kinds of things are we talking about?
Tamiflu is the one that we're most commonly familiar with, and then Relenza is another antiviral. And again, that's a discussion to have with your doctor. And I would second what Dr. Duvey said and go even a step further to your question about, well, how do I know if it's getting more severe?
Yeah.
Whether or not you're in one of those risk groups, don't wait until it becomes more severe. The CDC is emphasizing this year the importance of talking to your doctor early and getting on antivirals early. They work best if given within the first 48 hours. So if you wait until you get to the point where you're saying, hey, this is pretty severe, you're already at a point where the antivirals may not be as effective. You should still talk to your doctor about them, but we want to get the medication started early, get you treated early, so not only you get better, but you're not as infectious for as long.
And is that part of the problem also with the flu, at least one of the folktales I've always heard is part of the reason it's hard to contain is you're often contagious before you're even aware that you're sick.
Absolutely. You can be infectious for up to 24 hours before you develop signs or symptoms of the flu.
We are talking about the flu and about other contagious illnesses that are floating around in this, the sickly season. My guests are Dr. Jerome Adams, who is commissioner with the Indiana State Department of Health, and Dr. Joan Duvey, who is chief medical officer with the Indiana State Department of Health. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a call at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the challenges dealing with flu season and this sickly season when other contagious illnesses are in the air and all around us. My guests are Dr. Jerome Adams, who is commissioner with the Indiana State Department of Health, and Dr. Joan Duvey, who is chief medical officer with the Indiana State Department of Health. Gotten a Facebook question from a listener named Gary, and if you'd like to reach out to us on Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. You also can give us a call at 866-476-3881. Gary's question is, I am a newer user of public transportation and have noticed an increase in some cold-type symptoms. A public health question. Should regulations increase the requirements for healthy hand wipes, etc., for the safety and promotion of ridership? Which one of you would like that?
Well, fortunately, it's, you know, hand sanitizer is dirt cheap at pharmacies. Mm. I mean, you get a bottle of hand sanitizer for 99 cents.
Yeah.
And, you know, my family carries hand sanitizer around in their pockets or in their backpack. So that's one thing your rider could do. I don't know that I can speak to having hand sanitizing wipes on public transportation. It sounds like a great idea, but I'm sure there's a cost involved.
Is there a go ahead, Dr. Adams.
Well, and another point I'd make is if you're in one of those higher risk groups, then as Dr. Duvey said, maybe you want to carry around some of your own hand sanitizer. Or if you have a loved one in one of those high risk groups, then while we're at the height of our flu epidemic, perhaps you should stay away from public places. But again, putting it in perspective, the flu comes, it will pass. If you're vaccinated, if you're taking proper precautions, then you should be, and you're not in one of those high-risk groups, then you should be okay. So we don't want to scare people out of their normal daily activities. We just want them to take proper precautions as part of their daily activities.
Well, and I want to get to the spirit, I think, behind Gary's question here. Are there other regulations that perhaps we could have in place that might alter this, or really is the flu just, you know, like water, it's going to find any crack to flow through?
One of the things that hospitals in Indiana have been doing is requiring flu vaccination for their employees. And I think they've found that that's really made a difference in terms of, you know, days of work lost due to illness, and then also transmitting flu from patients to staff or staff to patients. So that is something positive that a lot of hospitals in the state of Indiana are doing.
What? And another thing that hospitals are doing that's great is they're limiting visitors in and out of the hospital while we're at the height of the flu epidemic. So, again, when you ask about regulations, regulations are tough because we are a country that prides ourselves on freedom. And I think it's up to each individual person and institution to decide, do we cater to a large number of high-risk people? Are we putting lots of people in a room together, and then taking into account the severity of the flu season and letting individual businesses and institutions make up their mind about what to do. But certainly, if anyone has any questions about the proper precautions, they can reach us at www.indianastatehealth.gov and find out the precautions that you can take to help limit the flu spread.
We'd mentioned earlier that already Indiana's seen 66 deaths this year, right? So there already have been really significant human costs that the flu has imposed on our state. What does it do to the infrastructure, in terms of what does it do to our hospitals? What does it do to other parts of our medical system? Do we have – well, let's go with that, and then I'll follow up with that.
Well, one of the things that's a concern of concern to both me and the governor is the burden on our hospitals. I've been around the state. I've heard from hospitals around the state, and they are just overflowing with the flu. Methodist Hospital, Ball Memorial Hospital, recent weeks they've had people in the hallways because of the burden of the flu. And the danger there is that if we're full with the flu, then we're not in a position to take care of other problems, be they simple problems, be they someone with a heart attack, or if we were to have some sort of God forbid terrorist event, we wouldn't have the capability to care for them. So, the governor has really wanted me to emphasize, and it's why taking the flu seriously this season, and it's why I've been going around, and why Joan and I are just always talking to people about doing the things that you need to do, not just for yourself, but to protect your loved ones and our communities.
Mm-hmm. What makes it so hard for people to take the flu? Because it is, 66 deaths, that's quite a few. And there is a history. I mean, the flu epidemic right after World War I killed, mm-hmm. Tens of thousands of people, if I remember my history correctly?
Right. Yeah. I think it may be that one year they got a flu shot and they still developed symptoms of the flu. It may have been another respiratory virus not related to the flu, but if their perception is that they got the flu shot and they still got the flu, they may assume that the flu shot really doesn't work. And the flu shot isn't a perfect vaccine. Many of our vaccines aren't 100% effective, and the flu vaccine is definitely in that category. Some years it protects people from the flu better than others. What I will say, though, is it was really interesting during H1N1 when we noticed that there were folks who typically we assumed would have a lot of H1N1 disease, those elderly folks, who weren't becoming sick as often as we expected. And when we looked, we found that there was some cross-protection from a vaccine they had received years ago that prompted an immune response and prevented them from getting sick. So the message is, get that flu shot annually, and you'll have the best protection you can against influenza virus. And then all the other things that Dr. Adams has been stressing, washing your hands and staying away from other people when you're sick.
And Dr. Duvey makes a wonderful point about the flu shot and a lot of the beliefs and misbeliefs about the flu vaccine. And in addition to that, I'd like to add that the immediacy factor comes up again. Of our 66 deaths, 60 have been elderly people with multiple comorbidities. These are people who are usually inside, away. And so even though we've had a large death toll, there are a lot of times people who aren't apparent to the populace. What's more apparent, in my opinion, is the economic toll from lost days of work, mm-hmm. and people not being able to go about their daily functions of life. And I think that's going to be tremendous this season.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Jennifer, and if you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can do so by sending it to nolimits@wfyi.org. That's right on point. Here it says, you mentioned that you're often contagious before showing symptoms. Are you also still contagious once you start feeling better, well enough to return to school/work, but not necessarily all symptoms resolved?
Well, it's a little bit difficult to say exactly when you're not contagious any longer. Typically, what we tell people is once your fever has resolved and you are starting to feel better. Know that if you're still coughing, your cough secretions may still contain low levels of influenza virus. So make sure you cover your coughs, cough into your shirt or your sleeve. But your viral load should be low enough then that you're not hopefully exposing others.
And hopefully one of the good things that comes out of this is that people get in a habit of good hand hygiene. Mm-hmm. Yes, we're in flu season. Yes, it's more important now. But good hand hygiene is something that we should be practicing every day of the year, 365 days of the year, so that we can stop not just the flu, but right. the cold and whatever other infectious agents are out
I know this is going to be a fairly silly and maybe way too basic question, But is part of the problem also, you know, a cultural thing here in that, at least in this culture, we shake hands.
Yeah.
We say hello to someone. Other cultures, they don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the case, do they do a better job of containing all of this stuff than we do? Or is it just something we have to live with?
Well, you're right. Culturally, we are a handshaking culture. Mm. And I remember during H1N1.
And a touching culture.
Yeah, absolutely. And during H1N1, you know, there was a lot. In fact, there was a cartoon about that, you know, new ISDH approved greetings. Mm. One of those was the bump. And, it was actually quite funny. But to your point, you're correct. And I can't imagine that we're going to stop shaking hands. So what we can do, however, is make sure that our hands are germ-free and, you know, make sure that we use good hand hygiene, washing hands or hand sanitizer if you can't wash your hands.
Exactly.
We are talking about the flu and other contagious illnesses here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Marion, welcome to the program.
Hi, John. Thank you so much for having me. I would like your health educator. I'm a nurse, and I've worked in infectious diseases. But I would like you to discuss the swine flu and its link to current intense confinement farming practices, specifically the confined animal feeding operations that we're trying to keep from still building, but we're having difficulty. And you know, concentrating, I've learned that we have got to concentrate on the etiology of these. And, you know, it's great that we're developing vaccines and stuff, but when we know the true etiology and it's not being dealt with, then we're all really in danger. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Marion. Dr. Adams, Dr. Duvey, which one of you would like it?
Well, that's a wonderful question, and it's always tough. We've got competing priorities constantly. We're always trying to pick and choose which viruses, which infectious diseases, which strains we're going to concentrate on. And the thing I would say that's a positive is that we are not in a swine flu predominant season. We've had no identified cases so far this season. And so what we're concentrating on is the H3N2 influenza A this season and trying to figure out why that's spreading so rapidly and making sure people are taking proper precautions. And the other nice thing about it is that if we do the things to stop the predominant strain this season, they're the same things that we would do to stop to prevent the spread of swine flu.
We've gotten a Facebook comment question from a listener named Robert. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. It says, in 2012, an NPR show had a scientist who tested his own finding about raising the zinc intake for 3 to 4 days to shorten the recovery time, less sinus and lung cells lost. This answered why I would instinctively crave peanut soup, peanut butter, rice, black pepper, and chicken broth. Why don't we hear more about taking zinc? Dr. Duvey.
I'm not sure why we don't hear more about it. I know that there are over-the-counter preparations that include zinc that many people really swear by when they get ill with a cold or with the flu. I think it's interesting that peanut consumption actually helped the commenter feel better. Mm. I think I'll try that next time I get sick. Mm-hmm. But we at the health department really like to focus on prevention. We don't want people to get the flu to begin with. So if we sound like broken records, it's because that's our focus. So vaccination, proper hand hygiene, and then staying home if you feel sick so that we don't spread flu.
Exactly. And I'm going to try some good peanut soup the next time I get sick. Thank you very much for that advice. But again, to second what Dr. Duvey said, we would love to find other interventions that limit the duration of illness with the flu. But right now, we're concentrating on just getting people vaccinated and getting people to do the simple things that they need to prevent flu spread.
And one thing I'll add, if I may, that's a great personal story. But what we do know works if you get the flu are antiviral therapies. So what I would hate for people to do is to stay at home for 3 days and try to increase their zinc intake, and not call their primary
their
care
doctors.
Doc. Yeah,
and not or.
Yes.
Yeah.
Keith, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello, Keith. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Question. I have congested heart failure, and I had a cold for like 2 weeks. I don't have a temperature, but I was wondering if you are a CPAP user, which I am, can a CPAP machine incubate a cold or a flu and try to get rid of it?
Thanks very much for the call or the question. We'll try to get an answer for you, Keith. Dr. Doobie.
Thank you.
Well, Keith, I'm not exactly sure about the answer to your question. What I would recommend is that you use proper cleansing and maintenance on your CPAP machine. I'm assuming that you're not sharing your mask with another user. So if you were already infected with one of those viruses, it's probably not likely that the CPAP mask is making that worse. It's probably that you just had an infection and you have a chronic illness that puts you more at risk.
I would agree with that completely. I'm also an anesthesiologist at Eskenazi Health and work with ventilators and CPAP machines all the time. And I would agree with Dr. Doobie that your CPAP machine, unless you're sharing it with someone else, which you shouldn't be, is not likely to be an incubator for the influenza virus because it would be coming from you, and you're a better incubator, quite frankly, than what the CPAP machine is. So as long as you're cleaning it and doing the proper things that you've been instructed to do to keep that CPAP clean, you should be fine.
Gotten a Facebook message from a listener named Brett who says, can you please discuss how the flu shot is effective if the particular strain of flu going around is not included in the vaccine?
Oh, Brett, great question. Are you a plant? That's great. Thank you for asking that question. Well, the flu vaccine actually contains 3 or 4 different strains or protection against 3 or 4 different strains of flu virus. So the virus that's not included in the vaccine is just one of those viruses. Sometimes during a flu season, we'll see one virus early on in the season and a second virus later. A B virus tends to show up later during flu season. So the flu vaccine does contain that flu virus, that B virus also. So flu vaccine protects against more than one strain. We have one rogue strain out there now that's not in the vaccine. But if there were other flu viruses circulating, you would have some protection against those. And then, as I said earlier, getting that flu vaccine every year, you may have some residual effectiveness from previous vaccines that would help you have less severe illness if you did get sick.
How do you determine that it's a rogue strain? I mean, what are the identifiers you use?
That's lab testing that's done, and they look at the DNA of the flu virus.
So you can't necessarily tell just by the symptoms
or anything like that? No, no.
So you really have to get sampled, among other things, to build the information base on this. You got to get people coming into the doctor so you can collect some evidence of what the influenza bug is this time, right?
Yes, exactly. Absolutely.
We've gotten an email question from Dr. Randolph, who says, please provide a clear, explicit explanation of influenza symptoms versus the symptoms of what is commonly referred to as flu. Many non-medical individuals have no idea what true influenza is. The term flu is used for everything from bad colds to gastroenteritis.
It's true. And actually, I'm guilty of that. Before I went to medical school, I thought that, you know, anytime you had vomiting or diarrhea, that was flu. So thank you for that question, Dr. Randolph. So you may have stomach illness, that you may call that stomach flu. That's not the flu we're talking about. We are talking about respiratory flu, which comes with a cough, fever, shortness of breath, and you just, you know, body aches. Really, you feel like you've been hit by a truck. And how does that differ from like a common cold?
Yeah, that was my next question.
Yeah, well, a common cold, you know, your eyes water and run and you get the sniffles and you're uncomfortable, but you know what? You get out of bed and you go about your day anyway.
We are talking about fun stuff, the flu and other contagious illnesses here on No Limits. My guests are Dr. Jerome Adams and Dr. Joan Doobie, both of the Indiana State Department of Health. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the challenges of dealing with the flu, basically at flu season and contagious illnesses. My guests are Dr. Jerome Adams, who is Indiana State Department of Health Commissioner, and Dr. Joan Duvey, who is Indiana State Department of Health Chief Medical Officer. Question. In regard to how we get an idea of whether this is good or bad, how do we, if as we've said, a lot of people aren't coming in to see their doctor or whatever, how do we get an understanding of just how many of these cases we're dealing with? How do we build the file on it?
So the State Department of Health has a network of sentinel flu sites. Those are providers and universities and hospital emergency departments who agree to collect samples from individuals who present with flu-like symptoms and then send those to our state lab where we look to see what is going on with that person. Is it influenza or is it another respiratory virus? That gives us an idea. We track that on a year-to-year basis. So it gives us an idea of sort of what percentage of those patients we're seeing with influenza. But influenza, I mean, it's so common, we couldn't possibly ask every doctor to report every case of it. So we never know for sure how many individuals are suffering.
And I should, I want to extrapolate a question from Dr. Randolph's email here, too, since he says there are a lot of other contagious illnesses that often get mistaken for influenza or the flu. Are there other bugs out there right now that are causing problems in addition to the flu? And if so, what are they?
They are. There are other viral illnesses that are circulating, like parainfluenza. There maybe some adenovirus. I don't have them all in front of me, but there are definitely other respiratory illnesses that are circulating.
And is it a difficult one of the uptick years for those as well, or is it pretty much run of the mill?
I haven't heard that there's been anything unusual apart from the enteroviral infections we were seeing earlier this year. So run of the mill, I would say.
We are talking about the flu and other contagious illnesses here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Cindy, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to bring up a TV commercial that's been running quite frequently lately and it annoys me every time I hear it. And the gist of it is that, you know, there's a baby in a crib and mommy or daddy is coughing and it says, I better call in for a sick day. And then it says, moms don't take sick days, they take medicine, you know, or dads don't take sick days, they take medicine. And I think that's so opposite of the message that we want to send. And I just wondered if the Board of Health or anybody addresses things like that that are out there.
That's a
Thanks
wonderful question.
Thanks very much
question.
For the call and the question, Cindy.
And I've seen that commercial many times, and I've never quite thought about it that way, but you are correct. We certainly are sending out the message that if you are sick, that you should stay home. And that's part of the job of our agency is to help dispel myths. But as you point out, as quick as we dispel one, there are two more that are put out there. But I think it's important both for employees and employers to understand the importance, particularly in this flu season, of people staying home when they're sick. And that's not just an employee decision. I talk to people all the time who say, well, I don't want to use up all my sick days. Well, employers, listen up. It's going to cost you a whole lot more if that employee comes in and gets everyone else in your office sick and your entire office is out.
We've gotten a very good email question from a listener named Chuck. And if you'd like to reach out to us via email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. He says, I am allergic to eggs and know that in the past, at least flu shots contained eggs. As I'm now in my 60s, I'm wondering, are the vaccines still produced using eggs? And if so, are there other vaccine options?
So that is a great question, Chuck. And I have good news for you in that there is now a recombinant flu vaccine that is egg-free. So call your healthcare provider and just ask for that flu shot.
Again, we're talking about the flu and other contagious illnesses here on No Limits. Chris, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, I was hoping you could help with a dispute that my uncle and I have had for a number of years now.
Oh, so we're doing family counseling here, too.
Yeah,
that's good. It sounds like Dr. Adams has some training there. So. I'm sorry, your question, Chris.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Now we can, yes.
Okay, sorry about that.
Not a problem.
My question is it possible to over-sterilize your body with the hand sanitizer everywhere? Everybody's crazy about hand sanitizer. Hand washing and, you know, all the flu vaccines that you take every year, all the medicine everybody takes to avoid, or antibiotics that people take to avoid from getting sick, is it possible to get your body so sterile that when you do get sick, that it is 10 times worse than it would be if your body was exposed to germs and bacteria on a regular basis?
That is a great question, Chris, and I'm going to answer that in a couple of parts here. So first of all, vaccinations. So vaccinations don't sterilize your body. In fact, they allow your immune system to actually react against whatever is included in the vaccination. And vaccinations, we know, are highly effective, one of the top 10 public health achievements, actually, and prevent lots of deaths every year. So vaccinations are good. Overusing hand sanitizer, I mean, that's a great question. And what I like to say is that hand washing, there is nothing that replaces good hand washing. Good old soap and water, you know, just making sure that you're washing. We like to say sing happy birthday two times. And so you have an adequate, you know, length of time that you're washing. And if you have access to soap and water and can wash your hands, that's best. In fact, it's interesting. There are some bugs out there that the alcohol-based hand sanitizers actually don't kill. So nothing replaces hand washing. But for influenza season, if you're in a room and somebody's coughing or you've touched something and you don't have access to soap and water, that's the time to pull out the hand sanitizer.
Exactly. You've got to keep things in context. And we're in the midst of a flu epidemic at the moment. So every decision you make, there's a pro and a con. But right now, I firmly believe and would say that the pro of using hand sanitizer if you don't have any other options is better than the potential con. And then, as Dr. Duvey mentioned, throughout the year, you really just should be washing your hands on a regular basis.
I've gotten a Facebook question from a listener named Wendy, and if you want to find us on Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. She says, I greatly hesitate to go into the doctor's office for anything right now as I feel like I would be exposing myself to germs. Mm-hmm. Is that an irrational fear?
That's a really interesting question, and I think a lot of physician offices are starting to have time for sick visits versus time for well visits. So I remember when my kids were real young, I would hate to take them to the doctor during flu season because I didn't want them getting sick.
Because if they didn't have it already,
yeah,
there's a good chance they'd have it when you brought them home.
Exactly. Yeah. So their doctor actually had that schedule. So if they were going for a well child visit, we would go in the morning. And all the sick kids came in the afternoon. And I think, you know, providers should really consider that as an option, especially during seasons where there's a lot of flu.
We are talking about the flu and other diseases. Caller, you're on the line.
Yeah, I just wanted to say from my own experience when my son was little that if I stayed home with him and my husband did the shopping, we all stayed healthy. If we took the toddler to the stores, we all got sick, and he was first, and he'd pass it on to us. And we were frustrated we knew, you know, if he wasn't busy touching things, his hands were in his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And what do? You don't want to spank them. You don't want to get angry.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't just hold their hands out of their mouth constantly.
Mm-hmm.
So finally, my husband invented this funny little rhyming story that made the child just laugh and laugh, but he also realized that what he was touching could be yucky. And then he didn't want his hands in his mouth anymore. And that stopped it. And so then, you know, it took a little time for him to change his habits, but pretty quickly. We were done with that struggle, and we didn't get sick very often after that.
Well, thanks very much for the call and for sharing that story.
I actually need that story because my daughter has her hands in her mouth all the time.
Well, I wrote it up into a book, and it's available anywhere you want to order it from.
Okay. Thank you.
It's called A Bird Flew Over.
A Bird Flew Over. Well, thank you very much for the call.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We've also gotten an email from a listener named Pam, and if you want to find us on email, you can do so at nolimitswfyi.org. She says, in addition to hand washing and vaccine, can you please speak about natural remedies such as inhalation, if antiviral essential oils and elderberry herbal remedy, helpful at first sign of illness to continue until, and I'm trying to access the bottom of her message here, symptom-free. Are there herbal remedies or more natural remedies that are effective?
Well, I'm really not the expert on homeopathic remedies for influenza. What I will say is the Centers for Disease Control, they are the expert on influenza, and their recommendation is that if you do have influenza, you contact your healthcare provider, and if appropriate, get started on antiviral therapy. And that's based on, you know, evidence-based clinical trials. We know what happens when you take antiviral therapy. And the remedies, the homeopathic remedies, may not have that science behind them.
And again, I'd go back to a comment I made earlier, and not or. We're not here to tell anyone that their remedies are wrong or that they don't work. But what we're here to do is to promote the things that we do know are most effective and that do work. So certainly, if you want to try an herbal remedy, I'm not going to tell you no, but that doesn't mean you can do that in lieu of a flu shot or in lieu of going to your doctor and getting an antiviral if appropriate.
Got an email comment from a Dr. Saberman. He says, as a local family physician, when I'm talking to my patients about how to care for themselves with either flu or other contagious illnesses, I advise them that they can return to work or school when they're fever-free and wouldn't mind sitting next to someone as sick as themselves. This seems like common sense, but also helps them think about the wellness of those around them.
I love it. That's great advice. Thank you for sharing that, Dr. Saberman.
We are talking, as I say, about the flu. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What's on your mind?
If you have a cold or your children have colds, and there's, well, it might be the flu or the cold, but I remember y'all explaining that. And you exhausted all the medicines, but they still have it. Because you don't want them to go through having shots and stuff. Is it possible that, because salt seems to be a major thing that they promote when you get a cold, like chicken noodle soup and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Is salt that important, or if you want to feed or eat, is there any alternative besides chicken soup or things that have salt in it to get better?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Jonathan.
Well, I'm not so sure about the salt, but I think there are things there. The chicken noodle soups, there's something, and I'm not sure.
Yeah, why does that make, you know, when I get sick, I have chicken noodle soup, and somehow it does make me feel better. Is that purely psychological, or is there something physiological going on?
Yeah, I think it's physiological, and I think that people have looked at that. I'm just not sure what the ingredient in chicken noodle soup, that's the chicken broth. But there's something in chicken broth that really does help you feel better faster.
We've gotten a question from a listener who says that she is, or he, I don't think there's a name attached to it, going away on a vacation with a group of adult friends where they're all going to be in the same space for 2 weeks. Sounds like a ski trip or something.
Sounds like fun, yeah.
Sounds like fun. But wanted to know, what are some common sense precautions if you are all going to be there, sharing kitchen, bathroom, all of that sort of stuff that you should take? Dr. Duvey.
Well, don't drink after one another. I mean, I think that might be one thing that the people might share drinks or, here, taste this. You know, just try to avoid doing that. Make sure you wash your hands. And if somebody does start to get sick, just, keep a little bit of distance between you and that person.
I would say practical tips, make sure you bring hand sanitizer. As Dr. Mm-hmm. Devi said, it's cheap. You can go by any drugstore or grocery store and bring it with you so that you always have it. And bring a Sharpie. To Dr. Doobie's point, we entertain a lot at our house, and the cups are always getting mixed up. And a very mm-hmm. practical way to make sure you aren't drinking after someone is to bring a Sharpie and make sure mm-hmm. everyone marks their cup or their bottle of beer or what have you, so that you know which cup is yours and you're not exposing other people to your germs and vice versa.
Make sure you get enough sleep, too.
Okay. And have we, in terms of this, we've mm-hmm. talked about it being a flu epidemic and all of that. Have we seen the worst of it yet, or how far away from the worst of it are we? You know, is it crested? Is the wave crested yet, Dr. Adams?
That's a wonderful question, and unfortunately the answer is we do not know. The flu is very unpredictable. We're hoping we've hit a peak, especially as it comes to the influenza A strain. But other strains of the flu could come back again. We could see a secondary peak. One of the things we're keeping a close eye on is that now that students are back in school, we are certainly expecting another small blip, and we hope that it's just a small blip. But unfortunately, flu season typically ends around March, and the CDC officially calls an end to it in May. But as bad as the season's been, I would not be surprised if it lingered on a little bit longer.
Why is it that the flu hits primarily at this time of year? What, you know, we call this the flu season, and everybody understands that. But why, you know, in some ways you make the argument that people are out and about and all of that sort, and in many ways more unprotected in the summer or the warmer months, but we don't refer to those as the flu season. What makes winter the flu season?
I want to say that it's related to sort of the cooler temperatures.
Okay.
But there may be other things, too, because we certainly do see influenza in warm climates. So, I'm not really sure what sets this apart as flu season.
And there was a wonderful interview that I heard on NPR just the other day where they've demonstrated in the lab that the flu grows better at slightly lower temperatures in your nares. Mm-hmm. So there is some scientific evidence to the old adage that you can catch it more when you're in the cold weather.
Well, thank you very much, both of you. This has been an enlightening program. I'd like to thank my guests, Dr. Jerome Adams and Dr. Joan Doobie, both of the Indiana State Department of Health. I am John Krall. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood, and board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.